what do you see as some of the major issues that are going to be addressed by the full body of the legislature for this next session?
Well, one of the ones I think you'll see early is LB 7 or 575, which is, you know, the bill from Senator Kaut that will simply say that you will be restricted to the locker room and bathroom of your sex at birth. Now, in western Nebraska, that seems like a pretty logical thing. But as you get in Lincoln, Omaha, they don't agree with that. So there'll be a fight on that bill. And, you know, I kind of knew where I was on that. That wasn't what I had to think real hard on. But it didn't really hit home until I was at the Mountain Warfare School last August. So this is the new Mountain Warfare School, huge facility. Think of something as big as the Bob Devaney Sports Center, only it's got climbing walls, and it's got the ability to train for about any mountain scenario you can think of. And when we came out of the field and came back in, to my surprise, there was only one bathroom and one locker room to shower and change in. And the wokeness has so woven itself into the thought process in the state of Vermont, I guess. I can't imagine us building buildings here that way, but I've lost hope that logic goes into what people do. But what happened is the guy sat in the hallway and the girls went in and showered and changed, and then the guys went in shower and changed. And you just want to hunt down the engineer that designed that and choke him because it's so stupid. But yet that's how they solve the problem, and that's not solving the problem. It's just making a horrible problem out of something that should have never been an issue. So I think they will probably go into the filibuster mode like they did last year, and they will probably grind things out. They know it's a short session. They know if they grind things long enough that we will lose a lot of good legislation. And if you're trying to make national news, that's one way of doing it. If you remember right last year, what we ended up having to do to get any legislation through at all is bundle it. And bundling is not right because, it is right in the sense that you can't do it, but you don't have an open and fair debate on each of these bills as they come through. You may not even know what's in the bill till it gets to the floor because you've got 15, 18 things woven into it because they become committee priority bills. Now, I've already prepared a committee priority bill with about 18 bills for the government committee because I got left in the cold last year because, you remember, I ended up getting tied up with my committee priority bill being voter ID, and that was filibustered. So if they continue to filibuster, we'll continue to bundle, and, we'll get through it. But it's a awkward, difficult process, and I wish they would let us go back to just normal floor debate and normality with the unicameral.
Well, yeah, I saw that certainly a year ago that bogged things down. I knew there were some rule changes that might be proposed for this year that would address a little of that. I did want to have you talk about a couple potential ballot initiatives that voters may see for 24. One would potentially repeal the action the legislature took to provide tax credits to those donating to private schools. And the other is the idea of completely changing the state's system of taxation, doing away with property and income tax and implementing a consumption tax, and then having the funding mechanisms for schools and county governments be more from a regional group. I wondered where you stood on this EPIC option proposal that's out there trying to gain signatures to get in front of voters for next year.
Another good question. At first, I was not necessarily a huge fan. I wasn't opposed to it. I just didn't know enough to really feel comfortable weighing in on it. And that was 7 years ago. And so as time has gone on and I've had a chance to see how the system works here and came to the realization that this process we use for taxation right now is not going to change. I mean, I know it sounds good when they say, well, we came up with a solution where you're going to have 15% drop in property tax. Most of what happens in reality is they just reevaluate things at a higher value, you may get your tax rate to come down a little, but what you pay is going to be more. And I guarantee that if you go back and look, and at least the 7 years I've been here, every year my property taxes went up. No, they never go down. And then it's picked up some speed in the last 3 years to where it's a little bit concerning that you can reach a point where you can't pay it anymore and then you lose your land. Well, you would like to think that that's something that's kind of sacred, that if, especially in the issue of ranches, have been in the family for a number of generations, if you're taxed to the point where you lose your land, then something's wrong with the system. Well, we're getting very near that. So that's why I started giving the Epic Tax a look. And at first, there were some issues with what is that rate? Is it 8%, 9%, 10%, 11%? You know, I think you could go clear up to 15%, and you're still going to be better off than you are with what you're currently paying. So, because what you have to visualize, if you had a whiteboard, you wrote down property tax, you wrote down income tax, you wrote down sales tax, inheritance tax. I mean, run down that list. And then mathematically add all that together, and you look where you're at, I think that number's pretty high. I think you're probably up in the 20s or 30s. So now even if you had the very high end of this thing, say it's a 15, you're half of what you're paying now. The trick to it is, how do you take that money and make sure that the system we have that works is painful, and it's taking a lot of what you make in this world, but you know, the fire departments are getting funded and roads are getting built, and, you know, the things that need to happen are happening. If we upset the apple basket, then what happens? And that's the question that I've worked through and tried to figure out. And at this point, I think they've answered enough questions, the Epic Tax, to where I support it. And part of that support comes from the frustration of seeing that we have these massive carve-outs for corporations and things that are currently not being taxed at all. And now all of a sudden they are. And I have no doubt that every lobbyist in this building will oppose the Epic Tax, because indirectly you would probably eliminate a lot of their positions, because it becomes more of a mechanical thing if it's a percentage and you're not doing carve-outs for everybody. Because that's what they're all about, is figuring out how to carve out funds for one particular group over another particular group, or special legislation to spend money for a particular group. And that's why I think that, you know, the Epic Tax is much fairer in how it's taxing folks. The mechanics, I think, still need a little bit more working out to make sure the counties get what they need. And as that county needs more, that they're able to get more. But, you know, where do you draw a line with too much? And I think some of the, what we call NUGs, the ones that come and take money. So if you look at that sheet you get that lists your property tax every year and who gets a piece of it, those are the NUGs. And the NUGs are always going to want more. But we got to figure out how to make them stay within limits. And I think the governor's doing a good job of figuring out what that needs to look like, and he's making some efforts to change that. But we're going to need to have a major change in how we manage things, or what you see will continue. And we're just simply, you know, the guys playing the musical instruments on the Titanic as it's going down, and we're still playing good music. We're doing everything we can, but that Titanic is still sinking. And I think, I mean, that may sound horrible, but in reality, if you've been paying property tax lately, that's where we're going, is to the point where if the cattle market comes back down again, with the price of property and grain and everything, there'll be a point you can't make ends meet. And then you'll see a really massive ripple effect throughout the ag community.
Yeah, I get those points, all of them. I just see, you know, some of the things I've read that we're looking at could be 20%+ by the time if you're actually going to recoup the dollars that you're losing through all those other taxing mechanisms. And then you talk about devastation if people simply just go out of state to buy the same thing that they would otherwise be buying in Nebraska, because that tax just becomes, you know, so detrimental to purchasing anything in the state of Nebraska for anybody that has other options. So, I mean, I see both sides of things, And, you know, I see what the governor has done again in proposing for more property tax credits and further, you know, funding things like community colleges to where the community college carve out on property taxes gets taken away and some of those things to alleviate. It's just going to be, I don't know, as I've seen and read and done research on it, if completely destroying the system that we've had is doing anything other than and making us giving us a major opportunity to have some catastrophic unforeseen consequences show up. But yeah, it's interesting a conversation, and you hope that it wakes people up to the fact of all the issues that you talk about on how the current system is really devastating people that own property that don't really want to sell that property if they don't have to. So, hey, and we've really talked a lot, and I appreciate all your time. I did want to have you talk about one more thing since we have you on, and you're kind of our resident expert. You know, you've been to Ukraine, I know, several times now. You've seen the situation on the front lines, and with winter now set in and the front lines a little static, with your military background and having been there, I just was curious of what you see as the future of that conflict for next year and how vital continued U.S. support will be for their Ukrainian cause after you've been there and seen things firsthand.
Well, I've been there five times now, and you know, it's hard not to almost get the feel that they are the, you know, they're the Minutemen, and it's 1775, and they're trying to make sure this huge country that's trying to control and overpower them is either going to do it or not do it on the actions of you know, really about 42 battalions is what they're got over there right now. They have fought such a great fight. No one predicted them to survive that initial attack. No one thought they would survive much past the first few months after they survived the first few weeks. You know, what you saw over there was just a people that just want to be free more than anything, that have come to love the idea of having a democracy. You know, they're this young nation that we were at one time before we started taking everything for granted. And you can't help but just want to root for them. You know, it disappoints me when I hear guys like Tucker Carlson and saying we got no business there, because really it's the farthest thing from that. You know, you either weigh in and you're with the Ukrainians and what they're trying to survive with their freedom over there, or you're with Putin. And if you're with Putin, you're with Iranians. You're with Hezbollah. You're with the Hamas. You know, you're in a pretty unique group if that's who you really want to support, because we have not had to fill American body bags with a situation where we have through our treasure decimated what was at one time the most powerful army in the world. And even when the war started, they were probably the second best army in the world. And right now, they're getting their butts handed to them on a lot of fronts, and they're getting it done by an army of folks that are fighting around the clock every day without any breaks, and they've been doing it for coming on 2 years now. And you can see they're tired. They're wore down, because never in the American armies, even World War II, we rotated people off the line. We gave breaks to folks. They're not getting that over there. But they're still got fire in their bellies, and they're itching to kill Russians, and they're doing a pretty good job of it. I hate the fact that we've had to, you know, tell them no. We're going to hold up funding, and if we sort our stuff out here, then we'll look at letting you guys continue to fight the Russians. You know, the Russians have never been our friend. They have backdoored, attacked us in different ways over the years. They've sponsored every form of terrorism there is. They're the nuclear arsenal we worry about, because China has some logic to what they're probably going to do. Russia has an antiquated thermonuclear capability that has been neglected for a lot of years. Their tactical nukes, the small nukes, the ones like if you want to shoot from Ainsworth to Shadron, you use a tactical nuke, and it vaporizes Shadron, but Hay Springs is fine and Crawford's fine. That's what their specialty is, because they wanted to use them on a battlefield. I'm not ruling out that they won't use them. I think Putin fears the U.S. might do something really bad if he did that. But he's going to run out of options at some point if he continues. I saw a British intel report from 2 days ago. The Russians are losing about 1,200 men a day, and this is that fighting up by Avdiivka. And the Ukrainians, they're still losing 100 men a day. But I don't see how you can sustain those losses. I mean, it's just unbelievable. But the whole war is changing how you fight war. And wars are fought with drones now. And I'll have an interview with Channel 7 here in a few minutes. And we're going to talk about the dangers that poses with the future here in the United States and terrorist attacks and things like that using drones. We should be over there learning from this. We shouldn't abandon them. We should help them win the war. We not slow roll them like we've been doing. Give them what they need to win the war. Stop the bleeding and let them become this nation that I think once they become free of this Russian attack, you have to rebuild the largest agriculture sector in history since World War II anyway. And Nebraska should be online to do that. We should be standing there because when I talked to their minister of agriculture over there, he said, listen, when the war is over, we're going to need tractors. We're going to need grain bins. We need corn seed. And we need irrigation. He ran this list, and I said, oh, my God, this is everything we have in Nebraska. Well, the EU is going to be funding rebuilding that country. I think we need to be in line selling Nebraska stuff to the Ukraine to rebuild that country. But we got to help them. We got to help them win the war. Ukraine is as big as Texas, but it looks like Iowa. That's what Ukraine is, and that's what the Russians want. And if they give it to them, now Putin has both oil and food, and he will choke Europe to death.
Well, I appreciate that perspective. It's a perspective we get uniquely through you on this that we just don't have access to otherwise. So I appreciate it. I know we've taken up a bunch of your time. We'll be catching up again as the session gets going and try to check in with you as things start moving through committees and things like that. So I appreciate your time, Colonel Tom Brewer, joining us here on KBRB. Thanks so much for all the time you've given us today, and we'll catch up with you again down the road.
You bet. Thank you.